ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys in the house again at the end of day two. The second Ashes test at the Gabba. Corbin Middlemass alongside Ed Cowan, my podcast co-host and former Australian opener. Hello, Teddy.
Corb, I don't know how to unpick today's play.
There was a lot of runs.
It was frenetic.
7 for 387 in the day, consisting of 76 overs. So in 76 overs, almost 400 runs scored and just 7 wickets falling.
And so how many overs have we lost across 2 days? 18.
So 74 overs yesterday, 76 today.
How do you feel about that?
Take out 2 for the change of innings. I think we need to reset expectations.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So I don't think anyone that attended yesterday or today will feel like they're shortchanged.
I agree with that.
But it's a bad look that we're advertising 90 overs and we're delivering so far short of it.
Agree with that. Okay. It's not that much fun when we agree with each other.
Yeah. Because don't you think, like, as long as people are being entertained, which you can't say they're not in the modern game, it moves so quickly. All you got to do is basically say to people, hey, once upon a time it was 90 overs in a day. Let's say the target's 80 for now on, or significantly enforce it. Like, but it's almost this weird thing where the only people that really care about it are the cricket media, and everybody else just acknowledges it for what it is.
Yeah, I don't mind a shorter plan day, and maybe you move the new ball to early, because that's a different contest as well. Anyway, let's get on the cricket. We can save that for the main pod, over 8 chat.
So if we said Ashes test, second one of the series at the Gabba, great pitch, only 3 mils of grass on it, and 387 runs in the day in 76 overs. You'd say, Baz Baller's gone ballistic, amazing, you know, the way they play aggressive cricket and everything else. And yet that wasn't today. So how does 387 runs get scored when felt like, you know, Australia in particular, who spent most of the day batting, weren't doing anything dramatic?
Well, they were allowed to score at the rate that they were purely because of the quality of the bowling. I was lucky enough to do the lunchtime session with you on ABC radio. I think at that point, I don't know, there would have been a handful of balls that were hitting the stumps. Australia got off to a great start. Weatherall played beautifully, left well. And when they did get short and wide, he cut. Same with Travis Head. So Australia got off to a flyer. England would have gone in at lunch and been absolutely brutally disappointed with their performance. It didn't get any better from there. They looked short of ideas. Obviously, all those little things that we talked about at the start of the series, not having a spinner. We talked about Nathan Lyon last night. Well, today was a great case study of England not having a spinner in Australia, because their fast bowlers at times are good, but when the ball goes soft with a pink ball like it did today, they were bereft of ideas. And if you look at, yeah, I don't mind comparing the 2 days' play, because, you know, there were some big moments. But rather than unpicking the big moments today, I'd rather kind of just talk about the game. And that middle session, batting is easy. And both teams had each other on toast. Day one, England had Australia on toast. Stokes gets run out. Freak moment. Fantastic, changes the momentum of the game. Australia today had England on toast. So we can see the scoreline, Australia 378. But they could have taken the game out of England's hands. Cameron Green and Steve Smith batting with their eyes closed, softball, attack weakening and bowling poorly. And they gave momentum back. Cameron Green, maybe we should unpick that. But I at that point in time, I thought, oh, that's ugly. And this might slip away. And then Inglis is out. Well, two new batters. Smith got out. Inglis got out. And it was only a rear guard at the end of the day that really got Australia out of trouble.
Well, they were still behind when Inglis got out.
Yeah. So the seesawing nature of this game, you look now and you say, okay, Australia have got their nose in front, maybe a bit more than a nose.
44 runs?
Yeah, it's a bit more than a nose, but it's not much more than a nose. Mm-hmm. And the game could go either way. So we've got a great test match on our hands, but it's frenetic. I sit here and I've been watching a lot of cricket today, and I feel totally out of touch with the modern cricketer. Honestly, some of the decision making, I'm like, I have no idea what is going through their minds. If you saw the dismissal of Cameron Green in isolation, you're like, that is wild. If you saw the previous 4 balls, what was it, 9 off the over, and he's backing away and slapping them, and it's like, what is going through their mind? But the flip side of that is they have such supreme confidence in their skills these days with the short form cricket. They feel like it's translating. And so I feel so removed from the style of play that Australia played today.
Yeah.
They could have buried England. And not just in this game.
Yep.
They could have taken the opportunity and said, you know what, we're going to get some big overs into Archer and we're going to almost kill his series. Same for Cast. But they didn't. And as it turned out, it worked today. But if it had gone the other way, I think we'd be having a very different conversation.
Just on Cam Green, so to drill down on that, that reminded me almost like a game of chess where instead of sitting there waiting to work out what you're going to do, it was just quickly, I'll move, you move, you move, and then we take pieces and off we go. And all of a sudden, Green lost his queen and all of a sudden he was in huge trouble and he was walking back to the pavilion because I had no idea what he was doing. I was on commentary at the time, and I know the other train of thought was, oh, well, you know, he's trying to manipulate the field. There were five back on the leg side, and he was moving out, you know, almost standing on the toes of the square leg umpire, trying to carve it away on the offside. And then you sort of come back into reality, and you think, hang on, this is the final session on day two of a test match in which Australia are bossing the game. Green's well set on 45. Why is he trying to do that? That's not the last three overs of a one-day game or a T20 game. He gets a full ball on middle stump. He's way out on the leg side trying to hit it on the offside.
And he's off the wicket.
What is he doing?
He was out of shot. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like this TikTok generation, they're intoxicated with impatience. I have no idea what is going through his mind. And so, okay, I'll put myself in his situation. As a batter, I don't mind if they're bowling short, have some kind of counter to it. You know, the pull shot might be the worst shot you can play. There are people back there. Mm. So carve one, try and manipulate the field. He'd done that. That was ball one. He slapped it through the offside. Ball two, maybe duck one. Ball three, maybe get inside it, right? But you have to, if you're playing chess, you got to have another move.
Mm.
You can't keep doing the same thing. And as it turned out, it was a dismissal that I think he'll wake up in the morning and be a little bit sheepish.
Shocker. Never got 100 on Australian shores. He's a tremendous player, and we saw that again today, you know, 45 off 57. But, gee, the way he got out was an ugly dismissal.
But it's not the individual accolade. I mean, all that is correct.
Mm.
The game is dead if him and Steve Smith bat for another hour.
Yeah.
So, done. And so if this game's dead, the series is dead. We know that. So it's more basically, the moment of the Ashes is on the line, and you just hand it to them on a plate, and you say, hey, Why don't we just make sure that this game's a little bit more exciting than it should be?
It's a great call out. And that's a team sport, isn't it? As much as your own individual performance can help the team, that's a moment where the team needed Smith and Green to bat large, and both of them were out in four balls.
If they lose this test match, and there's a, I don't know, 40% probability of that happening.
5%, yep.
5% probability.
Yeah, I think Australia win from here, but we'll get to that.
I think Australia are going to win from here. I'm saying it's 60-40.
But only 3 out of 5 times as opposed to 1 out of 20.
So if they lose,
yep,
that will be the moment that will come into question more so than, you know, us sitting here on the day, because it will change the shape of the conversation.
Yeah.
I think they'll win, but there's a chance that that is the moment.
Fascinating stage of the game. And like you said, England were right back in it. So is that Australia getting caught up in the baseball way and the way that they're being bowled to? So they're getting bowled to in a very unconventional way. So even when, you know, wickets fell, and I was on with Phil Tufnell all the time, and he was saying, come on, back to standard field, you know, slips and a gully and new batsmen there. Instead, they still had this sort of leg side trap with the five out, and they had almost the backstop in position that the third man was so fine. And so is that Australia just getting caught up with that and the short bowling and trying to find something to do with it as opposed to just thinking, hang on, I'll wait for these guys to bowl to me?
Well, I think the modern player is averse and maybe even allergic to ducking. And you think of some of the great contests of the last 10 or 20 years of great fast bowlers. I think of, remember when Neil Wagner bounced the absolute bejesus out of Matthew Wade?
Yeah.
And it broke Wagner,
yep,
really, for the series and almost ended his career.
Yeah.
And so, but that was Matthew Wade, a gritty, old-fashioned cricketer saying, you know what, I'm just going to take a couple for the team here because there's a bigger picture and we can buy into that. So to answer the question, are Australia too swept up in it? I think potentially they are, because sometimes the best way to attack fire is to pour a bucket of water on it.
Yeah.
Don't give it more oxygen. It's been... not hard to watch. That's the wrong description. It's been very entertaining.
It's
been very frustrating as someone who has seen a lot of cricket, and you think, oh, you could unlock and kill a series pretty quickly here, and they just keep, you know, opening the door for them.
And then Smith out a few balls later for 61. So it's an interesting looking scorecard where you've got Head 33, Weatherald 72, Labuschagne 65, Green 45, Smith 61, Inglis 23, and Carey, who's been dropped twice, is 46 not out at stump. So everybody's got away. Yeah. Nobody's gone large.
No, they haven't. And that was the opportunity, of course. I mean, we sit here and say Australia's ahead and you think it's a 95% probability of winning.
Mm.
What we haven't touched on is Australia caught and fielded with the house down.
Yep.
There were five chances today. All should have been taken. Not one and a half chance.
Mm.
There were two dollies and two 80% should, you know, professional cricketers with gloves on or not should take. And that changes the complexion of the game too. And so some basics, England have let themselves down, apart from some poor bowling with the new ball, just some classic cricket basics of catching. And that, I think, would be having a different conversation right now.
Carey dropped twice, even Nisa once late in the piece. Inglis was put down and then out two balls later.
They were none for 70. Travis Head could have been out
on three.
On three. So they're one for three. Labuschagne comes out. Who knows what happens? Like, it's just a different day's play.
Gee, they bolt everywhere though. It just looks like such an outlier now, that bowling performance in Perth. You sort of hoped that maybe they were tired, they didn't get enough breaks. So that was what the second innings in Perth was about. And now you go, well, actually, the second innings in Perth and the first innings here with the ball is more the norm. And that first innings in Perth looks like such an outlier, unfortunately, for England, who bowled so well there. And you can't say the same about them today in the heat and the humidity in Brisbane.
There's a pretty easy blueprint for taking wickets in Australia, and that is get the batsman driving. Yes, occasionally you'll get them out on the hook and the pull and the short ball. They might, you know, they might lob one up. But you have to be between 5 and 4 metres,
yep,
let's say. So what you call top of the stumps. Fourth stump, top of the stumps, little bit of movement either way. Think Hazelwood. Done it okay. Think Cummins. He's done it okay.
Yep.
They shouldn't be trying to reinvent how cricket should be played in Australia. There is a pretty easy blueprint to follow that Australia has used, and the teams that have come here and done successfully, if you think the South African teams, Dale Steyn, Philander, these
Morkel,
got
all of them.
Morkel, yep. they're pitched up bowlers. If you think about Bumrah, he's a pitched up bowler.
And the Aussies have been vulnerable playing, like when they received that kind of treatment in their home conditions.
Absolutely.
And every batsman's vulnerable, aren't they?
It doesn't matter how good you are. You want to maximise the chance of getting out. Well, you bang it halfway down the wicket and all over the place, and you're in the destiny of the gods.
Is Jake Weatherall the answer?
He looked every bit the answer today. That was a sensational innings. As I said at the top, he left well. But attacked when he got a chance. He played positively. He defended well. There was nothing today that suggested that he wasn't a long-term option. You see these guys come up through Shield cricket, and you never know how they're going to cross the chasm to Test cricket. But he's an experienced first-class player. He played well today. He's got one little technical weakness, and it was his downfall again today. And that he's got a little blind spot on the, you know, underneath his right shoulder as he shapes up as a left-hand batter. I had one as well.
Okay. What's a blind spot?
So it...
Well, I mean, we know what a blind spot is, but how does it work in cricket?
I'm picking up what you're putting down. Just give me a chance. So imagine, particularly from round the wicket and the angle into the left-hander, if the ball gets basically on the right side of your right eye, there's a area that you can't really see. And as you get lower and your head gets lower, and Jake Weatherald is quite crouched over, as we know, that spot gets bigger. And so you can imagine the ball coming at speed into your blind spot. You can't control what happens in that last meter. And so it's a bit easier over the wicket because it's traveling through it. But when the ball gets in there, I had a similar issue. You know, I have empathy for the situation. But when you get someone with high speed who can get in your blind spot, it's not good. And Test cricket, there are enough guys that bowl fast enough.
And we've seen Archer getting out twice that way now. And with all the data and analysis that goes on in the sport... Every team he comes
There's
up against is going to see that vision. So I guess the simple question is, what's the correction?
I think just a his head can be fractionally straighter. And that feeling, when a bowler's bowling around the wicket, if you can get your nose at the umpire, rather than everyone goes, oh, get your head at the ball. You get your head at the ball and it's coming from that angle, is actually taking you further away from your blind spot.
Yeah.
So you get your nose almost at the umpire.
Yeah.
And the blind spot will get smaller and it'll be easy to track the last meter of the ball. And this is very
I love it. It's this geeky sort of cricket high level analysis. But this is so particularly for a left-handed batsman that's crouched over against a right arm quick coming around the wicket.
Correct.
And then I imagine the inverse. So a left armer to a right hand batsman, and if your head position isn't right.
Correct.
And is that you've spoken a lot about, you've seen him crouching a lot, and that was quite apparent again in the way he went about it today. Is that part of it? The crouch stance?
Oh, for sure. And often batters, the faster bowlers get, the lower you get, because it means that you can transfer your weight without moving your feet as much.
Yeah.
So obviously, the faster the ball is, you don't want to be taking big steps. You don't have time. So you just want to be transferring your weight. The best way to do it is you get a bit lower in your stance. You might get a bit wider. And so all the inputs are there into a calculation that means Archer is a dangerous bowler to Jake Weatherwood. So that matchup is in England's favour.
Steve Smith leading into this match had only got 250s in his last 18 pink ball innings. So he actually averaged something like in that time 20-odd against the pink ball, and in the same period he's averaging over 50 against the red ball. He got a 50 here, he made 61, and probably similar to Labuschagne, he looked filthy at his dismissal where he sort of pulled away and caught it back with square. It was a good catch for whatever it's worth from Will Jackson. And Labuschagne, who sort of same as Weatherwood, when he got out, you thought, oh, it looked like 100 beckoned for him today, and yet he got a ball that was too close to cut, and he was coaxed into cutting, and sure enough, he nicked it through to the keeper. But both guys looked well organised on a good pitch until ultimately they got out.
Yep, and both went to a bat on a 45-degree angle. In Labuschagne's case, it was 45 degrees down, and that's when the ball is bouncing like it does here, that's an awkward place. We saw that Ollie Pope yesterday.
Yes.
And 45-degree up, Steve Smith, also a bad place. You need to get horizontal. You know, we all know. You got to get horizontal when you're cutting and pulling, and they got caught in awkward positions and paid the penalty.
The obvious talking point in the backdrop, and we've spoken so much about him, Usman Khawaja's been in the nets here. So it feels to me, and this is my analysis on it, that the way for him back into the team is either with Weatherald or with Inglis. So Weatherald made 77. Inglis is coming in at 7, which is interesting that they made the choice to put him behind the keeper rather than putting him at the usual spot in the middle order at number 6, or even putting him at 5 and leaving Green at 6. So that feels sort of very deliberate that they wanted Inglis to be at 7. He made 23 and got a ball which ducked back into him off the seam from Ben Stokes, and he was knocked over. Is there a way back for Uzi, do you think, on what you saw today?
Well, I'm kind of isolating that conversation to what is Australia's best opening partnership? Let's start there. And what I saw today was pretty white hot. It was hard to deny what you saw with your own eyes. They attacked well, they defended well, their game was organised, they looked sharp, and all the things that people have tried to pick holes in Usman's game lately, hanging back, not that sharp, bit of a lame duck. So I think if you're picking your best team, it'd be pretty hard to go past what you saw today. What do you think?
Yeah. So I saw the other train of thought put forward on Twitter today. I think Adam Crosthwaite put a tweet out basically saying, at 3 for 200, this is the time you want Travis Head walking out to bat. That he is that devastating figure that Cam Green should have been today to take the test away from the opponent. And quickly the replies were, well, we haven't been able to get there. We haven't been
we've
able
been
to
3 for 50.
Get to 3 for 200. So,
yeah.
I mean, in an ideal world, you'd love two Travis Heads, wouldn't you? And you have one up the top and one in the middle. I really like Travis up the top. I like that combination. He's clearly got a good kinship with Jake Weatherald. They played a lot of cricket together in South Australia. He wants to do it, so it feels like he's up for it. Not that should always be the deciding factor, but I think that's a stronger team whether it's Inglis or whoever else it is in the middle order. But I think you can find another middle order player quicker than you can find someone that's available to open. And Travis Head looks like he's well suited to it.
Yeah, I agree with that. One question. So you've got strong odds for Australia.
Yeah.
When you saw Ben Stokes with the old ball nip a ball back off a crack and Castle Josh Inglis.
Yep.
Do you think, if Australia have to chase 220 or 240, that might get a bit ugly. It's going to be hot tomorrow.
Seeing them walk off, they looked absolutely cooked down there on the boundary's edge. And I actually thought that last partnership almost swayed my opinion on this between Carey and Nisa. I actually see a world where there's a chance that Australia bat half of tomorrow. They get a new ball under lights. And I'm not ruling out that this is over tomorrow night. That we've seen England fold like a cheap tent in the past. And I hope I'm wrong. I want this series to be alive and go days. But I wouldn't rule out that this is done tomorrow night. But if England have to bat with a new ball under lights, that this could be scary.
I think that is not beyond the realms of possibility. It's how people are probably listening. Mm. Oh, that's outrageous. I don't disagree with that. I don't think it's in the balance of probability, so.
Yes, yeah.
It's on the dance card.
Yeah, but even then, I think if Australia bat the better part of two sessions tomorrow, England are going to be flat out getting in front again, let alone getting enough of a competitive score.
So I'll give you the alternate universe.
Yep.
They take the new ball in the morning.
Yep.
Go whack, whack. Australia are 60 ahead.
Game on.
At that point, what horse are you backing?
Australia don't want to chase much more than 250. I mean, how many times have Australia made over 250 really in recent times at home? So,
big first session in the morning.
Massive, yeah. But I just feel like England's got the new ball the wrong end of the day. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
That's what happens when you only bowl 74 of them.
That's right. That's right. One other thing that came out of the day was obviously the news around Josh Hazlewood, so Achilles soreness. We spoke about it during the lunch break. He was your pick to be the wicket taker in the series. I just feel like I need to remind you on that. Get the feeling, Teddy, he's not going to play anytime soon, is he?
I think Sydney at the earliest. I mean, I haven't been, although I say I haven't been very good. I think we're probably spot on with where it lands with Cummins. I think Sydney at the earliest, and at that point the series will probably be done, and it might not be worth risking.
That's and then there's a T20 World Cup that follows that, and he's our best T20 bowler.
That he is.
So I know a lot of people are thinking, oh, hang on, but it's Test cricket, and I'm sure Josh would want to play and everything else. But as you said, if the series is done by then, maybe that becomes the next major milestone for Josh on his return. That's a really good hit out, Teddy. I know people will be thinking, oh, what about Kay Garn and John Richardson's return and the ball being rolled into the pitch at Karen Rolton Oval and everything else?
What Mondays are for. Yes. We've got a main show as well. This is just a little entree.
That's correct. So Mondays and Fridays all throughout the Ashes series. Plus, after every day's play, we give you a little catch-up on Teddy's thoughts on the day specifically. And then on Mondays and Fridays, we'll dig a little bit deeper on everything that's going on in the world of cricket. Thank you, Teddy. Lovely to see you again in person.
Thanks for having me.
I don't think I'll see you tomorrow, but I'll chat to you very soon. Okay?
Yeah. Thanks, Corb.
Don't forget, you can head to the ABC Sport website for rolling coverage, live blogs, deep analysis, and up-to-date information throughout as well. So that will complement your coverage of the Ashes. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow at the end of day three. As I said, Monday and Friday, and after every day's play right here on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.